Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Marcellus Wiley here, Emmanuel Acho.
My brother.
You know this is going to be an epic show because you brought an epic one out tonight. All right, let's get it started, man. Truly historic day in sports. Let's talk some NBA, where the players have voted to resume the playoffs at the meeting this morning. However, the three playoff games that were scheduled to go on today were postponed. This news comes after the Bucks chose to boycott Game 5 Wednesday against the Magic to protest the police shooting of Jacob Blake, resulting in all three playoff games being postponed yesterday. So, Acho, the NBA players making the right decision to resume the season.
They absolutely did. Marcel, so I'm thinking of a couple things. One, your platform is your power. That's the first thing. Your platform, it is your power. The players have a platform because they are NBA players. So Doc Rivers, you think about his quotes post-game that went viral a few nights ago. Over 20 million or so people have seen those, roughly 5, 10% of our country. If not for that game, there's no post-game presser. If not for a post-game presser, there are no quotes and sound bites that are heard around the world.
Yeah.
So your platform is your power. The other thing I remember is the man with the microphone has the power. You see, when we're up here doing these shows, we got the mic. So people can sit at home on Twitter and say how much they like us. And those a little more ignorant can say how much they hate us.
Oh, they're ignorant.
But the person with the mic has the power.
Yes.
The players, by playing, are holding the microphone. You can do more by being inside the system, kind of as a covert operative. Marcellus, infiltrate the system and do more from beating the system from within than standing outside the system and yelling. So they made the right decision because, again, they are withholding playing games. Now all eyes are on them. What are y'all going to do now? Now it's just a matter of executing exactly what it is you hoped and you planned on doing.
Yeah, look, it was the obvious choice. I'm glad cooler heads prevailed in terms of going out there and play. I know that they went through a lot of emotional responses when this first went down in terms of the reaction to Jacob Blake and the reaction to all the civil unrest going on in our country. And let's be real, outside our borders as well, I'm sure, is having an impact since the game is global. We're talking about the NBA. That said, it's just amazing to me how much emotional theater is going on right now. We have to always understand that our emotional intelligence has a hard time having conversations with our cognitive intelligence. If you don't understand what that means, basically you get fired up on something and then try to think through it. You got to calm down. And it's interesting that these NBA players right now, I love the fact that their temperature was boiling. I didn't love the fact that while your temperature is rising and boiling, you were trying to make decisions. I'm a 45-year-old man who's living through multi eras of this same conversation. And I don't want to use the word redundant, but I also want to be a guy who's leaning in on his expertise, which is my experience. But also, I want to learn from these youngsters who are in a different world, who are experiencing maybe the same things in a different way. So for me, man, I'm a guy who was raised by a father, a few words, but many principles. And I'm now living in a world where a lot of people are of more words and fewer principles. And I'm trying to reconcile it all because I am not influenced by social media. I participate in it selfishly. I really post and dip. And then I come back and say, which I want to do. But I see right now there's another, as I spoke of yesterday, a media manipulation of the mind that's happening with social media. Look at social media just in its constructs alone. It's about likes and followers. I'm about love and leaders. I'm a whole different animal. So when I come at situations, I come as a humanitarian. My heart's first. I don't look at things binary. It's not me versus you. It's not us versus them. And I hear a lot of that. And it's interesting, as you have even said this before, my Nigerian brother, you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far?
Go together.
Go together. And it's amazing that when cooler heads prevail, you start to see the alliances between ownership and the players. What do you really want? Because if the attempts are to reconcile, or if the attempts are to eradicate evil in this world, evil in this society, then those will be futile efforts. But let's get to a place where we can mitigate, we can minimize, we can really understand, one, what are the objectives? What does that scoreboard look like, Emmanuel? And then let's try to make plays in an effort to make sure we can get to that resolution.
Yeah, I think when you consider what the players were doing yesterday, it wasn't necessarily a boycott, because like I said, a boycott, you were trying to affect the target. You were trying to economically affect the target. But I think the players realized, uh-oh, hold on now. I don't know if this was a broadcast issue. I don't know if TNT or ESPN or whoever else holds the rights to those games, Marcellus, is our problem. Charlie, we aren't the problem. And by not playing, I assume we're probably going to lose some of these dollars.
Yeah.
So what the players were really doing is another form of protest. They were striking. They were withholding their services or goods from the corporation or from the world to raise awareness. They have raised their awareness. Now it's a matter of what can you do next, Marcellus? I look at it and I think the players realize, and to your point, cooler heads prevailed of saying, okay, wait a second now. If we don't play, what are we accomplishing? Because now we're just going to have a bunch of talking heads talking, even though they may not be qualified. They might not even know our heart. So now at least if we play, and hopefully if we educate ourselves while we play, we can now allow the viewers to understand exactly where it is we're coming from and why we're coming from that position. Boycotting and not having the games, or going on strike and not playing the games, people just gonna go to Twitter, go to Netflix, go to whatever it is and fill their time with other things. So now by playing, you continue to maintain and occupy the space. Because, Marcellus, think about it. Even us talking about this. When they decided to go on strike and not play, we weren't talking about the why. We're just talking about the fact that they're not playing, which isn't accomplishing the goal.
Yeah.
We're just talking about the players. The players aren't playing so we can continue to talk about them. They want us to focus on the issues. If you want us to focus on the issues, make sure we're focusing on you so you can direct us to the issues.
Oh, man, you said it there. And what was amazing about this strike, boycott, day off, whatever you want to call it, internment, was the solidarity I saw, not only within the players on their specific teams, within the league as a whole, but cross leagues, other sports. And I know a lot of times we get up here and a lot of people have jokes about, oh, opponents are working out together in the offseason. Oh, look at them all going to the same specialized camps and becoming besties and then trying to turn it on when they see each other on the court. But what's amazing about those facilities is you work out with somebody you don't know and play with. And then you work out with someone from a different sport that you would never see any other place but in that place. And what happened yesterday was a sign of that unity of I could reach across the lines of my sport just because I have those relationships and I've humanized this moment. But what's also happening right here is you said, how far will this conversation go in terms of having impact? Well, it's going to go as far as you're brutally honest in that same conversation. The dialogue has to be brutally honest for you to have the opportunity, not even the guaranteed result, but the opportunity to really affect change. What's happening right now in our current social climate is polarization at its finest. Blacks, whites, cops. And because of those dividing lines, it put a lot of guilt on these players. I want to tell you what I saw yesterday from these players, what they were really feeling, that they're wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts, that it's on the court, that we are walking around with all the messaging on the back of our jerseys. And the same societal ills that we're protesting are still occurring. So you know what that makes you feel like? My therapist would tell me this right now. You feel like a fraud. You feel like all your efforts are not going to serve towards your purpose. What are you doing those efforts for? I must increase them. I must work harder or work smarter. And I think they woke up today with a different realization of how to work smarter. We're going to bring in Rick Bucher. Slick Rick, more for this topic and this conversation on NBA players. Hey, Slick Rick, did the players make the right decision to resume this season?
No, they did not. I'm not going to say that they made the right decision in deciding to boycott, particularly how that decision came about. But if you are going to go that direction, you can't stop. You have to define exactly what it is that you are looking to get or to gain from making that decision. And I feel as if we're tiptoeing around, or it's become sort of a vague notion as to what this is all about and what they're after. And I can only conclude that what the players are after, or what the players were after in terms of considering a boycott or considering not playing, whether it was not going into the bubble or it was not continuing to play in the bubble as of yesterday, is that they do not feel that what the owners and the league are doing is enough in support of what they are seeking, that they were looking more for more from them. And so I was very interested to hear exactly what it was that they wanted. I wanted to know what those tangible things were that they wanted to gain from not playing. And if they were going to say, we're not going to play again until we get these things. And that's not what happened. So we've now been at a point twice with the players where they have had the leverage of their ability to play or not play, to fulfill and fill the coffers of the NBA owners and the league with their entertainment. And they chose slogans and Black Lives Matter on the court and a $300 million social justice foundation, which comes down to $10 million in owner, and which is a lot of money for the vast majority of us, but for somebody who is worth billions, not quite the same. And they decided that that was, you know what, that's not enough. That didn't satisfy us. That didn't solve the problem. So we're going to shut it down again. And now we're back. And I can't tell you what was tangibly gained from this last decision of not playing for 2 days, it appears. I know this, that the slogans and that Black Lives Matter on the T-shirts and on the court did not prevent Jacob Blake from being shot in the back 7 times. I don't know what it has ultimately prevented or changed among people out there. And so that is what I would hope that the players would go after and would go to the wall seeking, which is we're willing, and I feel as if this is where they have to go. If they want immediate change, if they want immediate reform, you got to be willing to go to the wall and see it burn down in order to get there. If not, then you're half-stepping and nothing's going to be accomplished. And you're actually losing something because you're losing your leverage every time you have an opportunity to make an ask, and you ask less than maybe you're capable of getting.
Slick, I appreciate those words. Marcellus, Slick, this is a time, at least in my opinion, where we should listen, hear the other side. Slick, I appreciate your opinion. The players quite literally have seen the movie, and they've quite literally bought the T-shirts. Marcellus, you said this a few days ago, insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Yeah. 2012, LeBron James plays for the Miami Heat after Trayvon Martin, 17-year-old black young man, shot wearing a hood, comes out with the Miami Heat, we are Trayvon Martin, a hoodie that says that with his entire team. Well, 2014 in Cleveland, Tamir Rice, a 12-year-old boy holding a fake gun, was shot within 2 seconds of the police showing up on the scene. Cleveland Browns, they come out in some shirts over their jerseys. Justice for Tamir Rice. Well, Eric Gardner, 2014, choked. I can't breathe. 2014, LeBron James, Cleveland Cavaliers, come out in shirts. Once again, I can't breathe. 2020, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Jacob Blake. Black unarmed men shot, some killed, some fighting for their life. Again, shirts, Black Lives Matter, equality, justice. The fact of the matter is insanity, doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. The players would have quite literally been insane to just continue donning these shirts, hoping that it would lead to change. So, Slick, to a degree, I do agree with you in that the players wearing these T-shirts and simply taking a knee, it wasn't enough. I don't know exactly where I stand on should they have continued to strike or boycott, or should they play and use the platform. My first instinct is always play and use the platform, but I'm not going to sit here in the middle of this climate and vehemently argue with you, because I think what you said was very logical, and I think what you said was very practical, and I think, like Marcella said, the players had reached a boiling point where just wearing a T-shirt, that wasn't necessarily saving a life. So what can they do now to try to save one, to try to affect change within their communities? I think that's where the players are at.
Boy, I love you guys. Slick Rick, you went there. I love the gravity of what you said. Acho, I know exactly what I would have done in this situation. I would have been out there still shooting 30-footers, and everyone would have called me a sellout because I knew that the next day my brothers were going to wake up and they were going to be back on this court with me because of the alliance that's necessary to even evoke change. And I want people to understand that this change doesn't mean it's going to be absolute. There's still going to be people who go out there and commit murder. There's still going to be circumstances and there are going to be situations where it may be even an unarmed black man who's going to get killed again. Because what you're trying to do is eradicate evil, but really look at its offspring, which is, in this case, racism, people were talking about. There's classism, there's sexism. We've all tried to attack the different isms. But right now, we have a focus on police brutality and racism. And I just wanted to let everyone know that these athletes are being put in an impossible position to drive the conversation that is not just our issue, but it's a societal issue and a global issue. And we're now looking for athletes, coaches, sports leagues to solve something that the PhDs even struggle to still come to some sane conclusions about. So the smartest athletes in this room, no matter who they are, they're not qualified for this. They don't have the acumen. They don't have the time. There's a lot of one and dones. There's a lot of guys who didn't even go to college. And I'm not boo-booing on their intelligence. I'm booing on how they can apply what they are gifted in to what this conversation really needs. And I don't see enough of platform alliance with people who do actually do this work every single day. So the flip of it is we're asking athletes to go out there unqualified to change this world. Would you ask a PhD to go out there and change the world based on his basketball skill set? Absolutely not. You would not even think about it. It would be a weird episode of the Twilight Zone to see that occur. So this impossible task that has been placed on these players' shoulders is why you're seeing these emotional responses. It's because they're really attempting to eradicate something that has been here forevermore and unfortunately, in some capacity, in some degree, will continue to live on.
I agree with that. And the sad reality is, you know, we all want to see it change immediately, but it took a long time. It's been ingrained in this country and in the way people treat each other and some of the systems and the institutions that have created where we are. The idea that we're going to tear them down in a single day is sadly, it's simply not realistic. And I will say this, Marcellus, and I think we've all shared this, and it's one of the things that I appreciate being part of this show, is that it is the firsthand, first-person experiences that are shared. I know this in my own life, that have the most impact on my thinking and my thought. And a bumper sticker, I'm sorry, it doesn't have the same impact. And so ultimately, that's where we're going to have to go. But the players, if they want to affect this strong, immediate change, they are going to have to strong arm their way to it, and they're going to have to strong arm it with the owners, because we talked about the education and the influence and the politics. The owners are well versed in that. They became owners of teams because they are skilled at that. They became billionaires because they have that ability. So the heart of it is that the players have to recognize that and identify it, and they have to call for it, and they have to ask for it. And we'll see ultimately where that lands. But we keep talking in these big, vague terms of social justice reform and police reform. And honestly, the buck's coming out and saying, we want the Wisconsin legislature to reconvene and, you know, discuss police reform. My first thought was, the Wisconsin legislature doesn't care whether the Bucks play basketball or not. The Wisconsin legislature doesn't care whether the NBA plays or not. It doesn't affect them. You know what affects them? If the owners of the Bucks say, we're taking the Bucks out of Wisconsin, or we're going to close these businesses, or we are going to withdraw our political contributions to X, Y, and Z. That's where the change happens, and that's where the real reform happens. But unless the players get real specific on what it is that they want, and it's not going to be a one thing fits everything, but ask for something concrete and refuse to perform, refuse to do your job until you see that. Unless you're willing to go there, I'm just not convinced that we're going to get anything more than we've gotten to this point. And to this point, as you guys have both noted, it hasn't changed. Maybe it's changed something, but it hasn't changed enough.
Yeah, so unfortunate. Such trying times to use some of our greatest beneficiaries of the American dream of opportunity, collective great wealth, great accomplishment, these players, and to put them as the leaders of this conversation and the leaders of this movement in action puts you all in impossible positions. Because we're sitting there forced to defend who you are. I'm forced to defend myself as a black man, but I'm challenged even greater to defend what's right. And that's where the polarization comes in, because the other side doesn't want to hear it unless everyone comes along. And the players, with the acumen that they have, with the experience that they have, at the age that they are just ill-equipped for that moment right now. Coming up at the top of the hour, Jim Jackson was set to announce that the Bucks game yesterday was going to occur, but the boycott took place. We'll ask him what it was like to be in Ground Zero yesterday. But first, LeBron James reportedly voted to end the season last night. We'll ask if his former teammate, our own Tristan Thompson, what will LeBron's commitment level should look like going forward? That's next. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Let's move to LeBron James, who reportedly voted, along with his teammates and the Clippers last night, not to play the rest of the season. However, Chris Haynes tweeted this morning that LeBron changed his position and thinks it's in the best interest to finish it out in the bubble. LeBron went further on his stance this morning, tweeting, quote, "Change doesn't happen with just talk. It happens with action and needs to happen now. For my I Promise School kids, and communities across the country, it's on us to make a difference together. That's why your vote is more than a vote. Hashtag Black Lives Matter." Joined once again by LeBron's former teammate, Fox NBA analyst, and my dog, Tristan Thompson. Tristan, just last night, LeBron voted to end the season. Are you worried about his commitment moving forward?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think for Bronny James, I think it's extra motivation. I think, obviously with this going on right now is it's a lot of emotions going on. But, you know, people always say on the court, you never wake up a sleeping giant. Well, he's awake now. And now he got extra motivation and he going in super gear right now. So I think for him, yeah, he's all the way 2 feet in, locked in. And I think for him, it's like he looks at it, the more basketball I'm playing, the more my team is winning, and the more I'm on this platform where my voice can be heard all across the country and the world, that's the most important thing. So for him, he's going to handle it with his play on the court, but also when he's off the court doing media and interviews, he's going to keep talking about what's going on in our society, because it's disgusting and it's terrible right now. So I think that's like Mark Jackson said, Mama, that's a bad man. So he ready to rumble, I'll tell you that.
So here is my fear, Tristan Marcellus, is that there's a lot on King James's plate. And y'all know what the saying is, the straw that broke the camel's back. See, what we're asking athletes now to be civil rights activists, to be superstar players, to still try to be, in LeBron's case, a father and a husband. I just don't know, Tristan, how much you can focus on the game of ball when quite literally one night you're like, you know what, I'm good. I don't want to play the rest of the season. Then you wake up the next day talking about, okay, we can hoop. But I just don't know how committed you can stay to the game, to the cause, when you realize there are greater causes out there. I mean, even LeBron back in 2016, when y'all were riding together, he said, it's what, in reference to Muhammad Ali, it's what they did outside the ring that was really the most important thing. In reference to Oscar Robinson, Bill Russell, it's what they stood for off the court. So do you think that LeBron can truly, like, compartmentalize both trying to be this civil rights activist and also trying to be a superstar for the Lakers?
Of course, most definitely. One thing about LeBron, he's his brain, his programming is it's one of a kind in terms of he deals with so much other stuff when it's just a regular season that he's able to always focus and have his blinders on. Of course, like you said yesterday, he said, you know, I'm not playing. But that all stems from just, you know, being in the bubble, everyone's got to make sacrifices. So the fact that, you know, for him, we're talking about he, you know, made a sacrifice to come to the bubble like other guys. But one thing for him, which was important for him to come to the bubble, he said, we want to still be able to have that flat platform to talk about stuff. But for him, it's his upbringing. I mean, a kid from Akron, inner city Akron, with his mom, raised by his mom, no father in the household. You know, all those emotions come out after seeing what's going on in today's world. So for him, it was definitely all the emotions from not being able to see his family to his upbringing as a kid, because that's how most of us athletes felt. And I think if you ask a lot of the NBA guys that I've talked to, a lot of them was emotionally just angry and frustrated just because our upbringing, and then you guys too, man, upbringing. You guys already know how it is, man. Mom and dad, auntie come home, you know, get fired for no reason or don't get a job because of their appearance. Shoot, my dad didn't get a job because he had dreads and he's Jamaican. And he had to literally cut his dreads just to get opportunity. So all those emotions, I think, came out of players yesterday. But I think, you know, they had a time to sleep on and wake up today and say, you know what? We got this platform and I'm not about to give it to no a Republican convention party about what's going on. So we're going to keep this platform here so we can talk about what's going on and everyone's going to listen.
Yeah, I have no doubts about King James. I think you guys touched on these points. We all know how resilient he is. His upbringing speaks volumes about that. His drive, his greatness, how he's even exceeded expectations when the expectations were absurd from the beginning. When you're called the chosen one, when you're called King James, when you're 18 years old and you're already a household name, to exceed those expectations and to never step in it, I have no worries about him. Now, I know Sonny's son over here, the bishop's son, my man Emmanuel Acho, knows about how the Bible says, be hot or cold, not lukewarm, I'll spit you out my mouth. Basically, don't waffle on things. However, this is not really waffling. This is his emotions trying to reconcile with everything he's been through in his life and everything that he sees, that one day he knows he has to hand that baton off to his other young family members and sons and daughters and everyone in his circle. And he's like, goodness, am I going to hand this baton off with a better circumstance, with a better situation? Or am I going to have to fear for their circumstances and their situation? Acho, you spoke about his focus. Let me tell you the difference between focus when I was growing up and what focus is now. Growing up, focus was put one dot on the wall and stare at it. Marcellus, you are a football player. That's all you can be. Eat, sleep, drink, football. And then you start to see the evolution of mind and culture, and you realize that focus is throwing a lot of dots on the wall, but knowing how to prioritize those. I am a father, I am a husband, I am an athlete, I am the best player on the planet. I am also a civil rights activist. I can prioritize, I can accomplish more than one thing. I can walk and chew gum at the same time. No worries about LeBron.
See, where I disagree though is, and Tristan, you know from being inside the locker room, I know from watching the TV from the outside, you obviously have a little more intel, but I think what makes LeBron so great is also the same thing that has undermined his greatness. What do I mean by that? What makes LeBron so great is that he is, to me, honestly, a better human being than he is a basketball player. Mm. I promise school, what he has done for the kids, what he has done trying to promote voting within the community, within our nation, what he has done for people that look like him and the younger in the next generation. He's selfless. He's always thinking about other people. But then we saw early on in his career, particularly on the basketball court, sometimes it would look like LeBron wasn't trying to take the last shot. Sometimes it would look like LeBron wasn't trying to be scorer LeBron or things that are inherently selfish when you got to keep the ball in your own hands. That is why, Marcellus and Tristan, I'm a little worried. I'm a little concerned as a LeBron fan, because typically LeBron and his personality and persona off the court, they usually find themselves in their way onto the court. Again, not to get too much into the weeds of basketball, because we see that life is now more important. But what happened in game one? What happened when we saw passive LeBron, so to speak, pass and passive LeBron? Lakers weren't necessarily getting it done. But in the last couple games, when we saw LeBron get active and be a little bit more selfish, the Lakers got it done in abundance. So I think that while it sounds easy, it's a little bit harder than we think, especially LeBron, because he has shown a tendency to let...
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
His off-the-court greatness and selflessness find its way onto the court to the detriment of his teams.
Well, Acho, if you go look back at the film when you said, you know, LeBron didn't want to take the shot or pass the ball, if you look at all the plays, he actually makes the right play. I know what they say, you know, if you're the best player on the team, you got to take a shot. But sometimes, you know, shooting a shot with three guys on you, two guys on you, isn't the right shot. If you got a guy in the corner with his hands up, ready to go, you got to make the right play.
Because I didn't want to dive into this conversation.
Let's dive.
But Marcellus, we are here. Head first.
I'm ready.
The thing, Trist, is that you are correct. On paper, right, people have said, well, LeBron will make the right decision. And this is what I'm talking about, his selfless personality, which makes him a great human being. But remember, when you talk about some of the greats, whether it be Michael Jordan, whether it be Tom Brady in another sport, the right decision is LeBron taking the shot. You feel me? Like,
no,
sometimes,
I don't. No.
Jordan, at least if you dived into Jordan, right?
I don't.
He's not gonna say, the right decision was to pass. He was the right decision. It don't matter what the decisions were. Jordan was going to be the right decision. And I think, and I've said this, and we don't have all the time in the world to dive into this now, but I actually think LeBron's selflessness on the court, which makes him so great, is what has infiltrated and found its way onto the court, which is why I do think there's going to be an issue, because LeBron is the right decision.
That's all that I...
Well, first of all, see, you must never watch The Last Dance. You ain't watched The Last Dance because you must have forgot when he passed to Steve Kerr for the jumper.
On the
left wing.
Okay,
yeah, for the 3 points. So he passed it up.
MJ could have shot that. So he was 3 years old when it happened.
He's a baby. So yeah, he made the right. Yeah, I was definitely not even. So he does. Yeah, you're right. Like, you gotta make the right decision at that time. But I think the most important thing right now, especially with LeBron, I think at the end of the day, it's not like, if you have kids, you know, when you're on FaceTime with them and you can't be by their side, that's the biggest motivation in the world. So it's almost like, you know what? Kids, daddy don't go to work, handle business, but I'm doing this with this platform to give you a better opportunity. And for me to continue giving them a better opportunity is keep playing games and keep winning. Because the more I'm winning, the more I'm talking, and the more I can, when I'm done, like Marcel said, pass the baton, I can give you the baton with a better world. And that's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah, my word of advice for LeBron. Look at me giving advice to LeBron. But I have a therapist who gives me advice, so damn it, let me share it. You got to remove your
guilt. They're helpful, trust me.
Right. LeBron needs to remove his guilt and, more importantly, his fear. He may have told on himself, because LeBron produced a show that I thought was amazing called Survivor's Remorse, a basketball player who made it and then looked back at all his friends from the past and his community of the past and tried to save all, and just showed how that struggle looks in terms of someone who's accomplished so much and then others who are still on that quest to accomplish the same things. You got to remember, LeBron, we all live in duality. Not everybody wants to own it. Not everyone wants to show it. But there's a little angel right here and a little devil over here. And we all live in those worlds where we're just trying to have that balancing act and hope that that angel wins a lot more battles than that devil does. Let's be real about this. I want LeBron to live and to start talking more about his prosperity than just his pain, because he's existed in both. And he survived through that adversity and became the greatest player on this planet, no matter what obstacle was placed in front of him. I think that message is getting lost right now. I feel the same way, and I haven't accomplished as much in a sport nearly what a LeBron James has. But in my accomplishments, it feels like a tale of two lives. It's one that was told to me when I was growing up, that I had to look out for everybody in my neighborhood. And the stats told me that I wasn't even going to make it out of my neighborhood. And if I made it to my 18th birthday, I should celebrate, because that was the goal. And then I was like, I am not going to live in that fear-based mindset. No, I'm not. I'm going to accomplish everything that I think I have in me so I can reach my greatness. And then once I was able to accomplish a few things, guess what? Now I'm living in a world where everyone's telling me, look over my shoulder for the police. Look over my shoulder for racism. And once again, I go back to what got me here, because what got me here is going to get me there. That I'm not living in that fear. I'm not living in that mindset. I understand that ills will always be surrounding us, but I also know that hope will outlast and outshine all the despair that I see surrounding us. Coming up, Pete Carroll thinks players could boycott NFL games as well. Well, we'll tell you what influence the NBA is having next. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. The Bucks boycott created a domino effect, not only in the NBA, but also in the NFL. Multiple teams, including the Packers, Jets, and the Washington football team, have all canceled practice today. In Seattle, Pete Carroll was asked if he could see NFL teams not taking the field this season and said, quote, anything's possible. This is a protest that doesn't have an end to it until all the problems go away. Joined by Fox NFL analyst Var Arrington, but Acho, I'm coming to you first. Do NBA boycotts have any impact on the NFL season?
I think they absolutely will. I think about this. I am by no means a runner. Okay, my joints, my knees, everything. I'm not a runner. Marcellus, if you were to be like, hey, Acho, let's go run a marathon after the show. No, thank you. But if you're like, hey, Acho, let's go run a quick lap, I'll be like, bet, because that is feasible for me. Mm. You see, running a marathon is way out of the stretch of the possibilities of feasibility for me. Mm. The NBA, had they ended the rest of the season, the NFL would have looked at them like, them players, that's not going to happen. But by simply missing a game, coming back a game later, that's within the stretch of reality for some players to be like, okay, we don't necessarily have to miss a game to make a change. We could actually do something that's within the stretch of our reach and our imagination. Mm. So I think the NBA, by coming back to play, actually incentivizes NFL players to do something. While it may not be missing time, they realize, okay, we don't have to end a season to create massive attention and to continue to create massive change. But the other thing for NFL players, whatever you do, you just have to do it together. Remember, you had Colin Kaepernick, Eric Reed, Malcolm Jenkins, just a few of the notable NFL players who were making a lot of noise lately. But Eric Reed and Malcolm Jenkins, they play each other, I think, last year, and they fighting pregame because they're on different pages. You got Eric Reed, who's fighting for equality, calling Malcolm Jenkins a sellout. Same Malcolm Jenkins who's fighting for equality. Mm. Marcellus, I played middle linebacker. I ain't played for a long time, but I played for a good time. And LeVar, you know this firsthand. The middle linebacker, you make the calls. Coach gives you the calls from the sideline. You relay it to the rest of the team. My coach always used to tell me, look, Acho, if you're all wrong, you're all right. Mm. As long as y'all are all on the same page, even if you tell the rest of the team the wrong call, but y'all all run the same wrong call, it's going to be all right because you're on the same page. As long as the NFL players do whatever they do unified, it's going to be all right. But what's the saying? United, we stand. Divided, we fall. NFL players, whatever it is that they do, which I think they will do, they just got to do it together.
Yeah, I like where you're coming from with it. I have a tad bit of a different angle of all of this. I'm looking at everything that's going on, and everything has become such a hot button topic surrounding racial equality and how those things work, justice. You know, we have...
Think we lost...
Am I here? Am I still there?
You're here, but you're not moving.
Am I here?
There you go. Pick it up right there, big dog.
So here's what you got to understand. We have been protesting, if you can imagine this, since 1883, y'all. 1883. You know how long ago that is?
A long time.
So to think about the process and what we're trying to gain in terms of boycotting, not practicing, not playing, whatever it may be, we are missing a step, people. Like, we have to take a very good, hard, long look at the fact that we are missing a step. To boycott, to protest, we've seen when they put the fist up in the Olympics, all right? We had Muhammad Ali, didn't go to the war. We've had many figures that have done things to try to progress equality, racial justice, and we still find ourselves looking at what just happened to Blake, looking at what happened to Breonna Taylor, looking at what happened to George Floyd. It's still happening, people. This made me think about this, fellas, and I'm gonna put this real quick so y'all can have it. This is about blades. Yes, like when you make a sword, right? Mm-hmm. There is a forging process that takes place. All right. Now, during that forging process, You can manipulate that metal and that steel however you would like to manipulate it and shape it and mold it, okay? Once it cools off, once it goes through the process of going from that liquid phase to where it is hard steel, you are not going to change it. You can sharpen it, it can dull, but the essence of that blade is going to be what it is unless you start the entire process from start. From start. Mm. We are looking at this and approaching this the wrong way. In order to create the change that everybody is protesting for, that everybody is boycotting and looting and fighting and arguing, this crisis is based upon the influencers taking a extra impactful step of doing what they need to do with the shapeable, the moldable, the pliable youths, the youth. You are not going to change what these owners are thinking. You're not going to change what the government is thinking unless you raise up a generation of young people who understand what this classic conditioning of U.S. society has represented is different from what we should be doing. We should be doing the right things, but you only know what the right things are if you learn it during a time where that can become a part of what your established identity is.
Mm. That's good.
Okay. Well, I don't think the NBA is going to have any impact on the NFL. The NFL is going forward. The NBA, it's almost lazy to even think that they are going to bleed together in this respect. They're two different organizations, two different games, two different mindsets, even by his personnel, come at things a lot differently. So let's talk about the heads in terms of Commissioner Roger Goodell, who still has an on record, even with Emmanuel Acho's uncomfortable conversation, directly apologize to Kaepernick. You know why? Because Roger Goodell's sitting there like, hey, bro, y'all don't really, really, really want to know why I'm not apologizing, but I'll protect this delicate issue. So with that said, let's contrast that with Adam Silver, who came into the league in day one. What is this racism landing on my lap named Donald Silver? Oh, okay. Donald Sterling. Oh, it's right here. Well, let me just handle this. This is an easy one. And now it seems like because of him leading with a lot of social activism, a lot of what the players wanted, the players are getting in terms of messaging. I'm not sure in terms of real constructs, but Black Lives Matters on the court. You got league sponsored jerseys with certain names that you can put on there in terms of messaging. Completely different than Roger Goodell. So I don't think that they're going to even approach this the same way. But you know who I just found? My kindred spirit. Y'all know how I talk about it. The only way y'all going to really make change in this element in slice of life is influence your circle of concern, your circle, mm-hmm. you know, your mm-hmm. your family, and raise them mm-hmm. a higher character. Everything else is a lot of lip service and emotional theater. But Bruce Arians, my dog, must know where I'm coming from. This is what he said, quote, "Your responsibility is to take action. I don't know what protest is an action. I think each guy has a personal thing. I would beg them to take action. Find a cause and either support it financially or do something to change the situation."
Bam.
Because protesting Bam. Doesn't do crap, in my opinion. I've been seeing it since 1968. Bruce, I've been saying this since 1974, and I ain't even remember the day I was born. This is an age-old problem that talking to it is just
in there the you
wind.
Go.
Coming yeah. up, NBA players will continue playing, but did they accomplish anything by boycotting? That's up next. Speak for yourself, presented by Hyundai. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. We are staying in the NBA, where the players decided this morning to resume playing in the playoffs. However, the three games that were scheduled today will be postponed. This follows the Bucks choosing to boycott their game yesterday to protest the police shooting of Jacob Blake, resulting in all three games being postponed. Joined now by Fox NBA analyst Chris Broussard. CB, I'm sure. starting with you. Did the NBA players accomplish anything with the boycotts?
Yes, and how much remains to be seen, but I do think they accomplished something. They let NBA owners, corporate sponsors in the league, the television stations and networks know we will go there. And if there's another incident like what we saw with Jacob Blake within the next few weeks, maybe they will go there. Maybe that'll be the final straw. So we have seen that if they do go there, if they do make that sacrifice, then it will reverberate through other leagues. I was watching you guys earlier. I know you said NFL players wouldn't follow suit. I'm not sure. Now, obviously, you guys played in the NFL, but if the players decided we've had enough, we're stepping away, I think that would put pressure on the black players in the NFL to follow suit and do the same thing. So the threat, I think, is there. Secondly, and I say how much remains to be seen, they talked to the lieutenant governor, the Milwaukee Bucks did, and the attorney general in Wisconsin. They are pushing for what the governor of Wisconsin is pushing for, which is for the Wisconsin legislature, which hasn't met for months, to meet next week and look at the police reform bill that has been on the table for more than a month. It's got nine different bills to it for police reform. If the pressure forces the legislature to meet and pass that bill, that is a big win for Wisconsin. And then what did they ask of the owners? Are they asking the owners to open up your arenas to be voting sites? That would be a win. Are they asking the owners to use your connections to talk to Donald Trump? A lot of them are friends with Donald Trump. Ask him to tone down the racially inflammatory rhetoric. That would be a win. Did they ask Donald Trump, or I'm sorry, the owners, to maybe look at what you can do to abolish police unions, which is a possibility? So I think there are things they could ask for that would be big wins. The question is, did they ask the owners for them, and will the owners go ahead and do it?
Did the players accomplish anything? It's three letters, TBD. Like Chris Broussard said, we just don't know. Let's go back. A quick history lesson, 1936. In the face of Hitler trying to show Nazi superiority, Jesse Owens, a black man, goes there and wins 4 medals. But it still took 10 years to integrate baseball in America, America's pastime, dominant sport at the time. Remember, Jesse Owens comes back to America and isn't given an American welcome. He said he still had to go in through the back door, still had to sit on the back of buses. So while there was a demonstration, it didn't necessarily make immediate change. Okay, let's talk about 1968. Tommy Smith, Don Carlos, they raised their fifth on the podium at the Olympics after getting first and third in the 200 meters. Well, still, in 2020, ahead of Tokyo, Olympic athletes were forced to sign something called Rule 50, which stated that you were not allowed to have a demonstration of any kind, political, religious, or racial propaganda while winning or on the podium. So a lot of these things, like a rubber band, they're pulled out, but then they will snap back and return to their normal state. Unless these players continue on in what they started, unless they persist and make this strike, this boycott, not just be a postponement, because really that's all it was. We ain't play games for 2 days, and then we're going to start playing these games again. Then not much would have been accomplished. Again, in life, I like to be significant instead of being successful. But for the sake of this boycott, we need these players to make this more successful than just significant. For the last 24 and now to be 48 hours, it would have been significant. The sports world, the basketball world, it was put on pause. It stopped. It got our attention. But now, after it got our attention, what are you going to do with that attention that you got?
Yeah, who didn't grow up here? Use what you got to get what you want. I used to hear that from my aunties all the time, right? I don't know what these guys accomplished. TBD is a good way of saying it. I'm hopeful because you kept saying, Chris, and I respect it, that, oh, players got the owners on notice, got the world on notice. We will go there, but where I'm from, I'm like, go where? What's up? Like, I call you on that challenge because you say you're going somewhere, but where are you going? Being a former athlete that was in his 20s and young 30s, I always had billionaires in my phone, always. Owners, I could call them. And it's amazing that I saw so many athletes not take advantage of networking. As I used to say, work the net. So what happens is a lot of athletes wait to say hello when it's really time to say goodbye. Or when they only need something. How about when you just care about the owner himself in a casual relationship, so then that alliance is already formed? To come at somebody almost at gunpoint, say, do this or else, and those things that you're demanding are societal ills that are pervasive before all of us were born, it's kind of a lot to ask in terms of what are the measurables that these athletes actually going to attain. So the crazy thing is, making statements is one thing, but that is a lot different than planning, structuring, and sustaining a movement. completely different animals. I asked Kaepernick about that. It's one thing to go out there and splash, but now, after that splash, what are you going to do to sustain that momentum that actually changes and materializes the words, the verbiage, to concrete actions? And because I've lived through era after era where everyone has said, and Acho pointed out in some of the history lessons, someone's done something, we said, that's the spark, we need it. But that's not the change that was necessary. Coming up, you do not want to miss this. Our very own Jim Jackson was set to call the Bucks game yesterday when the boycott went down. We'll get the inside scoop. Ducks, speak for yourself! Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. The Bucks chose to boycott Game 5 against the Magic Wednesday. The move sparked other teams in the NBA and in other sports to follow. Our Fox NBA analyst Jim Jackson was set to announce the Magic Bucks game, and he joins us now from the bubble in Orlando. So Jim, when did you know something was up when you were getting ready to call the Bucks Magic game? What happened?
You know, we got word maybe that Toronto might do something early in the day, but we really couldn't put any credence behind it because we didn't have enough information. But once we got to the arena, we noticed an NBA official from the office kind of pulled the referee crew to the side and kind of talked to him. Mm-hmm. And we were looking like, okay, is that game related? What's going on? So we kind of let it pass. And Orlando was on the court shooting around. So was Milwaukee. But once Orlando went to their locker room to get ready for the pregame warmups and came back out, as the clock continued to tick down to zero, Milwaukee never re-entered and came back on the court. And that's when we got the announcement that they had chose to boycott, and they spoke with the Orlando Magic team to also get them involved. So it was game day as usual for us. But once the clock hit zero, that's when we got word that the game would no longer be played.
Wait, so clarify for me real quick, because I know there was a lot of discrepancy among that. Did the Magic know that the Bucks were going to? They didn't. Wow. Okay. Right. Now, the energy has already been different in the bubble. We know that. The energy is just weird. What was the atmosphere like yesterday? Could you feel the energy even more different than the already strange senses in the bubble?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, because it was an unknown sense of fear. You didn't know what was going on, especially for people who were working, because you're like, okay, are we staying here? Do we have a job? Is the season going to continue? We know that since the games are going to be canceled yesterday or today, that's what I'm talking in present terms, like yesterday, more than likely Thursday games are going to be canceled as well. Where does that leave us? Mm. Okay. A lot of people who work on the production side, a media side, were just wondering what the next steps were going to be. I, as an analyst, did not know exactly, you know, would there be games played? Was that stay in Orlando? Was it to leave? We just didn't know. But the thing you do is a lot of times you step back, you allow the situation to work itself out. Instead of trying to negotiate in your head what's going to happen, you try to allow the players to do what they have to do in regards to their meetings. We knew the Board of Governors meeting was going to be today, and then you would come with an outcome, and then we would go from there.
Now, the players decided to keep the season going and play in the playoffs. You think they made the right decision?
If that's what they wanted to do, yes, because it was certain demands that they made of the Board of Governors that they felt that was conducive to their commands. Now, I want to back up a little bit because I was listening to you and, I mean, Marcellus and Emmanuel talked to Chris about moving forward and what is going to happen. As we've seen in the past, a lot of demands that haven't been met, and the rubber band theory, like you talked about. I like that, Emmanuel. But I think the difference is in the example you use, Emmanuel, with Jesse Owens and also John Carlos, the difference is they didn't control the economic standing of track and field at the time. True. Okay. So they can say what they want, but track and field was still going to go on. Okay. Their impact didn't affect the bottom line as much as we see today. See, what's happened in the NBA when I played, the union and the NBA didn't have this working relationship, okay? It was always butting head. But what we've seen over the last 5 to 10 years is that, especially since Adam Silver has taken over, you have a different relationship, okay? More of a partnership. So the voices and the demands, and I don't like to use the word demands, but the voices of the players are heard a lot clearer in today's world. Okay, so now you can sit down at the table and consider yourself true partners. Yes, there are going to be some disagreements, but at the end of the day, that's why the bubble took place, is because the NBPA and the NBA were able to get on the same page. Moving forward, we've seen that the voice is strong within the NBA by bringing together the attorney general. I think there was a district attorney of Kenosha, Wisconsin, to bring that press conference to fruition, okay, and push that agenda forward. I think what the players want is these owners in these 30 cities, you have an opportunity to impact these communities from a social standing. Not that they're not doing something, but they can always do more. The players want these owners to do more, whether that's voter suppression, whether that's criminal justice reform in their cities, whether that's racial equality in their cities. That's what they're asking. Now, it's not the onus of just the basketball players or the NBA to push this agenda forward. We can open up the conversation, but the question is, once this conversation is open, what does the rest of society lend to making change? We're only a conduit in some aspects of what can happen, but we need everybody involved once these parameters are set in order for all this to come together and effective change needs to be made.
Well, then let me ask you this. I guess my first small question is, did you get the sense that the Magic wanted to play? That's my first part.
Mm. I don't know, because we weren't down there. We only got the back end of what happened, because if think about this, if you're in the locker room and you're ready to play, and then they tell you, "What, we're boycotted," of course you're ready to play, because you didn't have this conversation. But what I'm hearing too is that there's a couple players on the Milwaukee Bucks team that had a conversation the night before about this, okay? And then they took it to their team game day, okay, about the strategy of what they wanted to do. And sometimes I tell you, for a plan to work, you can't let everybody know, bro. You just can't. You just can't do it, because now you start to leak the situation and it's not as effective. So I applaud the Milwaukee Bucks, and I'm sure Chris Paul, being the leader that he is, was able to talk to the player representative there in Orlando, explain the situation as to why we're doing this, what the outcome would be, short term and long term, and we need you on board. And at the end of the day, the Orlando Magic complied with that and also chose not to play the game.
Then let me ask you this, because you're down there, you're in the heat of it all, you're in the mix of it all. Are the players on the same page across the different teams? We heard LeBron wanted to play, then LeBron didn't want to play. Mm-hmm. Okay, LeBron wants to play. Clippers don't want to play. Okay, the Clippers are going to play. Mm-hmm. Magic weren't notified. The Bucks were going to play. Are the players on the same page?
You're never going to have full cooperation. It's impossible because you got different agendas, different perspectives, different ideas. But the thing is, as a collective group, that's what a union is for. You make a vote, and the majority win, okay? And if you're going to support somebody, even though you don't agree with it, that's what you have to do. I'm sure there'd be some dissidents. You know, you heard that maybe LeBron walked out last night in the meeting, but yet he came back to the table and had a conversation and expounded on that, because you have to agree to disagree. Everybody is not going to be comfortable. Everybody has a different situation. I don't care what it is. You and Marcellus work together, and there may be conversations you have about how the show is going to go. You may have your idea, Marcellus may have his, but at the end of the day, you come together and say, okay, this is what we're going to discuss. These are the topics that we're going to challenge ourselves with. That's the beauty of having a team atmosphere. We don't always have to disagree for a decision to be made, but as long as we're on the same page and the message that we're saying, once the decision is made, is comprehensive to what we're doing and is in line to what we're doing, then you have the full cooperation.
Yeah, Jim, everything you see on this show is just me saying, go ahead, Acho, whatever you want, big dog. You know me, I got all these kids. I ain't tripping. All right, here we go. To your point about LeBron going back and forth and obviously really trying to reconcile his emotions, are there any concerns about the players' commitment to finishing the season after an emotional few days?
But that's a great question. But just like anything, you know, you got to be a professional. Yeah. Life is not perfect. When you choose to step out there in an uncomfortable situation, you still got to do your job. You got to be professional first. Life is not easy. Life is not to make easy. How many times have both of you played in an uncomfortable situation where it may be something at home with your family affecting you, but yes, you still had to go do your job, because that's what you do as a professional. So when you step out on a limb and you want to take this stand, you have to still go and do your job. Mm-hmm. End of the day, there's no excuses.
Good. Yeah, as Coach used to say, they pay you the big bucks to do the things you don't
don't want to do. You better believe it.
Thanks, Jim, man. Continue.
Anytime, brother.
Great keep, energy.
Keep doing, keep doing your thing, brother.
No thanks. Yeah, no whatever Acho wants. Okay. Right. Coming up, now that the NBA boycott is over, what will qualify it as a success? Ooh, Slick Rick the Buker joins us next on Acho Show. Speak for yourself.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. We're staying in the NBA, where the players voted to keep playing in the playoffs. This news comes after all three playoff games yesterday and today were postponed as a result of teams around the league protesting the shooting of Jacob Blake. Joined once again by Slick Rick Buker. Slick, what would qualify this boycott, this NBA boycott, as a success in your eyes?
Well, Acho, look, I could give you a number of actionable items that I think would make it a success. But it really comes down to what do the players want, because they are the ones who are boycotting. So it's their action. What do they want as a result? For me, it sounds, based on what I've heard, they would like to have the police officers that shot Breonna Taylor arrested and charged. Okay, so we're not going to play until they're arrested or charged. From a political standpoint, and I know people don't want to make this a political referendum, but sounds to me as if the players don't like this president and would like him to be out of office or removed earlier. We're not going to play until our owners commit to making or seeing that happen, or committing themselves to doing that. Whatever it may be, getting all 30 owners to sign some sort of pledge or guarantee or have a contract. This is my whole problem with this, is that for me, I have not heard the players define what success is. And if you don't know where you want to go and what you want to get, how do you ultimately achieve it? I've taken some negotiating courses, and I've worked with a negotiating coach because I wanted to understand how leagues work. How does a player or an agent create the value of a player? Well, you have to have proof points. You have to have certifiable things, and then you have to attach a number to them, but you have to determine, you have to prove why that thing is worth that number. Thinking that we're going to, that the players are going to solve all the social ills that exist in this country is simply unrealistic. Know where your power goes, how far your power reaches. And as you guys said it previously in the show when I wasn't on, when you were talking about, like, know your side. I thought it was great, Marcellus, you said your circle of influence. Like, affect your circle of influence. Know what your circle of influence is, and then operate accordingly. That's been my issue here. There's no way to define what success is, because I ultimately don't understand. I understand what the players are upset about. I understand what they'd like to see change. But what is it that they want to see happen right now? Why are they missing games in order to see what? If I knew that, then I could tell you what success is. I can tell you what I think it is based on what they've said. But I don't really know, and that's at the heart of this issue right now.
Yeah, and I feel it. Talk about the heart of the issue. Those aren't reasonable measurables. Ethics and morality aside, it's just that's not something that they can accomplish by just sitting out of a basketball game and really trying to gun to head the owners to try to make those things occur. That is crossing many lines, and I mean, while you're at it, if you're just shooting for the stars, end racism while you're at it. Like, it just has to land somewhere. And all jokes aside, man, my grandmother always said you can't make sense out of nonsense. And what you're talking about, Slick Rick, is there's no scoreboard. Like, all these athletes, I'm a former athlete. Acho's a former athlete. You play sports. Like, we need a scoreboard. How do I make plays that add up to points that help us win this game? And it needs to be that damn simple. It's what I loved about sports. Beyond the meritocracy, beyond the fact that I looked in the huddle and I saw all different types of people from different backgrounds and likenesses, and I didn't grow up with brothers, and now I had a team full of brothers. Put that to the side. I knew the course of action. Wiley, C-Gap, make that. Do your job. Don't try to do somebody else's job. It's admirable. But guess what? You're going to compromise what we're all trying to do right here. And I'm just not hearing
that same play calling from these players. They should know better, and they should be used to it. It should be in their muscle memory in terms of call the play and then go out there and really put all of your effort and discipline in executing that same play, and then you look up at the scoreboard to see the results. Not the same way happening here.
Yeah, what will make this a success? We have to remember this is not a black and white issue, and I'm not talking about skin color and race, black and white. I'm talking about there is no definitive line, a delineating marker that says this is successful. Racial equality, it is not a finish line that you will cross. It is a road that you will travel. And the players just have to understand they are traveling this road. We, the media, this society, we have to understand we're traveling a road together. It's not looking for a white checkered flag that says you have arrived because we may never arrive. We just have to choose to walk that path together. I'm reminded 1973, the exhibition tennis match, the Battle of the Sexes. What was it? Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King. Bobby Riggs, he had notably criticized women in sports. Billie Jean King in that Battle of the Sexes beat him in that exhibition tennis match. But still, 2020, women in sports are fighting for their respect. I'm also reminded 1967, Boston Marathon, Catherine Switzer. She put her name in as KV Switzer to run in that race because it was not opened up to women. The race manager actually tried to tackle her while she was running. It still took 5 years until 1972 for that race to be opened up to the registration of women. Now in 2020, 45% of racers that run in that Boston Marathon are in fact women. So if we're continuing to search for a finish line, we're just going to have to keep moving on this road. Again, Marcellus, in my house in Austin where I used to live, I was driving to my community. It was gentrified. And they're building because it's a bunch of new builds. And every time I would drive back after a long road trip, I would see houses are starting to stack up and starting to stack up. But the houses aren't built overnight. What's happening is each and every day, people are laying hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of bricks. So success, if we're looking for it, it's not going to come overnight. It has to be these athletes, along with us in the media, along with each and every person in their society, to lay a brick by a brick, by a brick, because Marcellus has alluded to it prior throughout the course of the show, and I will allude to it here. Each person can affect their house, and their house can affect the city, and the city can affect the state, and the state can affect the nation, and the nation, therefore, can affect the world. But it starts with each person affecting the house. So kudos to the NBA players for affecting their house, the National Basketball Association. Coming up, we'll give you our final thoughts on the NBA boycott coming to an end and what to think about the players' decision to finish the season. That's next. Speak for yourself. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. No Uncle Jimmy, but before we go, big news in the NBA today where the boycott has come to an end and the NBA will finish the postseason in the bubble. Marcellus, what yes. are your final thoughts in what has been a pretty historical 24 hours?
Yeah, I still want to give tremendous amount of respect to the NBA players for having this heavy on their hearts and trying to figure out what action to pursue, as you can still work and pursue your goals of being basketball players, tremendous basketball players and ambassadors of this world. But at the same time, you can have something heavy on your heart and try to affect your community. You can do both simultaneously. So my word of advice to all the players is, man, run this race as best as you can. But remember, you're on a relay and you're not the anchor leg. Your job is to just get the baton and take off and run the best split you can and get the greatest lead you can for you and yours, and then hand it off. I've been able to do that in my family, and I've seen it not only just from me, but other people I've grown up with, just trying to create a new and greater environment for those around them. That osmosis will continue to grow, and then you will see a greater change.
You said it best. You said it all. NBA players, y'all keep doing your thing.
Let's keep it going, y'all.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.